Number one is that, you know, the primary source of information that all campaigns use is the voter file. So you go to the Secretary of State or the DMV even, and you register to vote, and you put your information on a little piece of paper. That little piece of paper gets carried to the County Board of Elections, which gets carried over to the State Secretary of State or the Board of Elections, and it gets put into this big list. And campaigns for many years, essentially going back to Abraham Lincoln, have been using those list of people to figure out who might be undecided and who might be the type of people that we should turn out to get them to vote. So in a lot of ways, campaigning hasn't really changed since the 1860s. We need to register new people to get them to vote for us. We need to turn out our likely supporters, and we need to persuade people. What's changed is how we use that information to do it better. So what kind of inferences that we're building on top of those lists to do it better, and how we're adding new pieces of information from outside the voter file and adding it to that to enhance our ability to build those inferences. For example, digital information, fundraising information, to a limited extent, consumer data, though it's not that important. And kind of putting that into a single unified database from which we can analyze all those points of data to help understand who do we persuade, who we turn out, and who do we register.
And what you did that was different this time, as I understand it, was you really individualized that information. You didn't just say women under 40
That's right.
may support President Obama versus women over 60. You were much more individual, correct?
Yeah, that was one of the kind of the main principles that we took into 2012. For many years, campaigns, and if you listen to television pundits, you'll sometimes hear them using some of these words. They'll say, the key is women, or they need to turn out Hispanics, or
as a class
of people. And there's an underlying assumption within that language that those people are, in fact, the same. But when you start to look at some of these data points on the voter file, or even just in a basic survey, you start to understand kind of the diversity in our country is more than is stated through some of these conversations about people that are bucketed into these broad classifications or frankly stereotypes. And so when we thought about the campaign and we thought about what kind of outreach we were going to create for people, we thought about how we were making sure that we were turning out the right people, persuading the right people, registering the right people, but from a perspective that took into account the implicit diversity that is present all around our country. Or in a state, you know, like Montana. Not everybody in Montana is the same. They're very different from Missoula to Bozeman, and they're very different within Missoula from one side of the city to the other and from one house to the other. And the idea was how we individualized our outreach, taking into account everything we know about people and then modifying our communication based on what they said back to us.
Here's what one reporter said about what you did. Quote, the campaign didn't just know who you were. It knew exactly how it could turn you into the type of person it wanted you to be.
With some likelihood, yeah. You know, we don't know everything about everybody all the time, but we were able to say the important things with a certain amount of certainty that helped the campaign design its outreach. So, for example, and one of the biggest assets the campaign had was the legacy infrastructure that's been built at the DNC or the Democratic Party for many years. And in Montana, I remember going back in the 2008 campaign and later in some of the midterm campaigns in 2010 and later in 2012 was that, you know, you guys have a very strong local campaign presence where a lot of people are very civically active in campaigns. And the record of that communication is actually recorded and then kept at the DNC. And that because it's recorded is that the next time we talk to you in 2014 or 2016, we can say, hey, you know, we talked to you in 2012. We know that you are undecided on these certain issues, and this is what was important to you. So because we have a more comprehensive picture of voters, because of those records of conversation, we're able to, you know, predict with a higher likelihood what might be important to people and customize our outreach based on that information.
And outreach is key too, isn't it? I think that sometimes gets lost in this discussion of big data. You have an idea that someone's sitting at a computer looking at all this information, but that is translated into what is really individual personal contact.
Yeah. The rubber has to hit the road and work. You know, it's one thing to have a bunch of, you know, nerds sitting in a cave processing information on computers.
And it was called the cave, wasn't it?
It was called the cave, yeah. But that contribution is hollow unless there's a means of execution where personalization is present. And, you know, we invested a huge amount of our resources, and probably larger than any campaign had done in history at a national level in this field, in the field, which is person-to-person, doors, phones, people talking to people with basic organizing and enabling those volunteers to have these personalized conversations. The analytics helped them conduct more accurately. But ultimately, you know, the only reason it was valuable was because those people built that infrastructure to make it possible.
A critic might say that this is still a little big brotherish, mm-hmm. and that you are basically framing a message to try to be all things to all people,
yeah.
versus having a message that a candidate strongly believes in,
yeah.
and you find the people who that message appeals to.
Yeah, and I think in terms of that difference between, you know, the big message that we use to communicate the campaign and then the specific message that we use to communicate to voters, I guess there's two points on that. Is number one is the main message that we used into the campaign was consistently used across voters. And that message had a lot to do with, you know, our country is going through an interesting process where middle class opportunity has shrunk. We've seen, you know, drops in median wages. And so a lot of what the main message of the campaign was about was communicating to all voters about that idea, about how we create an economy that was, you know, quote, built to last. And that message really permeated everything, both because that was the president's choice, but that also kind of matched the policy decisions that he had. So in that respect, it wasn't a pure analytical process that was driving that communication. It was really reflective of what the president himself wanted to talk about. But there are different people who think about different services from the government, from their country, that they want to hear about. For example, there are a lot of people I don't know. We actually had a campaign in New Hampshire where people were very interested in hearing about forestry policies. And they want to hear about the main message of the campaign, but they're also interested in hearing about how the federal government affects their lives. And as a result of that, we were able to customize something because that was something that was relevant to their life. They are less interested in hearing about, you know, import-export policies with NAFTA, for example. Some of them might be interested in TARP, but as a way to customize something to say, look, this is how we're interacting with your life based on what we think we know.
You really applied the old slogan, all politics is local.
Yeah, I think that is the idea, is that for many years you had these kind of two campaigns going at the same time. One, you had this big national campaign, which was hundreds of millions of dollars, placing these big bulk ads on TV saying positive, negative, et cetera, targeted towards those broad demographics. And then secondly is you had these very intimate local campaigns where neighbors knew their neighbors, they knew the issues that were important to them, and they talked about the issues that were pertinent to them because they had a record of history in their brains. The exercise was how we took that process B, which is the local campaign, and really scaled it up to build that same level of relevance at a national level. And the technology helped us facilitate that, but it was all, you know, it was about kind of building that organization and providing them with an infrastructure to help them do it. But, you know, our field team was ultimately the people who ended up doing it.
Well, your secret's out now.
Yeah, the concept of it is certainly out.
So it will be applied by all sides, I'm sure, in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the devil's in the details and execution. So, the story is kind of out there for better or for worse. If somebody wants to live in a 500 square foot closed off environment in the back of with 50 other people in the back room of a cave, I salute them. But I guess the point that I'll try and make is, you know, the curtain was opened up a little bit on the process. And that's okay. There are positives and negatives about that. You know, we always maintained a policy in the campaign and previous to the campaign that we were building internally, and we never kind of spoke externally about it. Well, what I'll say is on a go-forward basis, you know, that was what we built in 2012, that the world is changing so quickly right now, and not just in campaigns, but in medicine, in education, in energy. And the race is going to be won by those people that are thinking about the future and are building capabilities that are consistent with that future. True for politics as much as it is for your local clinic down the street. When we think about what we're building, yeah, the curtain has opened up a little bit on the process. But I think at Civis, we're keeping our mind to within the politics and outside of politics, how we're building for the future and how we're thinking about making data more relevant for people.
One final question for you, Mr. Wagner. Any chance you're going to be working for Hillary in 2016?
We'll get there when we get there. Right now, our work in 2014, we are working with the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. So a lot of our work is very heavily focused on working with the Senate. And that's really what we're focused on now. And that's a long time away, so we'll get there when we get there.
You may be spending more time in Montana. It's a crucial race here.
Montana is a crucial race, yeah.
We have been speaking with Dan Wagner, who's CEO of Civis Analytics and also was the chief analytics officer for the 2012 Obama campaign, one of the key figures in how that campaign was conducted. Mr. Wagner, a pleasure to speak with you about the brave new world of analytics. Thank you.
Thank you.